Hello, welcome back to the Punchin' Pod, episode 12. Now, Oscar, been gone a little while now, but the combat sports, everyone's favourite combat sports duo is back. How have you been, mate? And I tell you what, we've got a lot to get through this episode and beyond.
Yeah, it's good to be back. We're back better than ever. And yeah, mate, I've been good. Obviously, watched all the fights over the weekend. So I'm really keen to talk about them with you tonight. So that'd be good.
Yeah, I mean, I remember last episode we were talking about John Fury and the Furies getting involved. And we saw them again feature Inevitable on the weekend. But as you said, yeah, we've got a lot to get through. We're sort of going to cover all the boxing that happened inside the ring in Saudi on the weekend. And we're also going to try and touch on UFC 299 as well and touch on some of the results there and the impacts they have going forward. As we said, we'll start with the boxing in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Oscar, they tipped it as knockout chaos, and the main event certainly delivered knockout chaos. Maybe not on the side of who we initially thought, though. Give us your reaction of that. I mean, it was an incredible knockout.
Yeah, it was. Let's be honest, it's up there as knockout of the year, right? Like, and it probably will be just because of the magnitude of the event. Just the way Joshua dispatched of Ngannou after that same fighter went life and death with Tyson Fury just a few months ago. I think it's a performance that will be spoken about for, yeah, the next however long, just because of how much pressure that Joshua was under. I think he had a point to prove that night that he wasn't only going to beat Francis Ngannou, but he was going to beat him in good fashion and basically restore order in the world of boxing. And I think he obviously did that. He did that in emphatic fashion. When you think about it heading into the fight, I mean, based off that performance against Fury, you'd have to, like, I think we both kind of gave Francis a bit of a chance. I mean, you probably more so than me, but I even didn't rule out a potential Francis Ngannou upset just because I know what he's capable of. He's one of the hardest punching combat sports athletes out there, and especially in the heavyweight division. I mean, I did think that it was a fight that was difficult to predict, and I kind of went with the notion that Joshua would just stick and move. He'd outbox Ngannou. He'd stay behind the jab. He'd play it safe, almost like he did in the Andy Ruiz Jr. rematch. But I think Joshua kind of thought, you know what, like, fuck that. I'm just gonna make a real statement here, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, and I mean, I think going into the fight, it's fair to say most people, if not everyone apart from Ngannou and his camp, thought Joshua would win the fight. But for me, it was just the way it ended and the knockout. I thought Joshua would win, granted, but I thought Francis would give him a real war, a real test. And granted, in Francis's fight against Fury, okay, whatever you want to say about Tyson and his performance that night, Francis, that was still his debut, and he still went 10, 12, however many rounds it was with Fury, knocked him down, didn't really seem to take too much damage, and he's a real warrior. And I've never seen Francis Ngannou knocked down, never mind knocked out. So when round one started, I thought we were in for a great night of boxing and an absolute war. But then when I saw Anthony Joshua on the other side, I knew he would be good, but I thought, okay, this is now where he's going to get tested, and if he gets through it, then this is a side route. And I think even he said, I'm on a mission, I'm going for the goal, but this is sort of a side quest for that. But the way he demolished him and the way he threw that right hand, I mean, it's devastating, really. I mean, as you said, probably knockout of the year already, and one of the most brutal knockouts I've seen in boxing in recent years. I mean, he was out there, as you said, really to prove a point. What do you think he did well in the fight? I mean, it only went two rounds really, and but there were good signs once again from Anthony Joshua, you would say.
Oh, definitely. I think that relationship with him and Ben Davison is working such a treat. I mean, they've just found something that is like a dream for a fighter and trainer partnership. They've got an understanding. I feel like Ben Davison's method in terms of, looking back at all the footage, seeing what openings they could potentially exploit in their opponents, that really complements Joshua's kind of natural inquisitiveness, like in terms of him just wanting to learn more about the sport. And Ben Davison is obviously a student of the game. He knows the sport inside out, even at the young age that he is. So I feel like a lot of Joshua's performance on Friday is testament to that kind of fighter trainer team. And yeah, I mean, in terms of dissecting the fight itself, as you say, there's only two rounds, so it's difficult to kind of look back on it and properly gauge where Joshua is, although I think we all know that he's vastly improved in his last couple of fights.
Let me ask you a question. You talk about that partnership with Ben Davidson. Do you think they went into this training camp thinking, as you said before, we're here to prove a point, we're going to do what Tyson Fury couldn't do, and all the talk about Francis and the upset, we're here on a goal and we're just going to keep plowing for opponents and ultimately do what Tyson couldn't?
Absolutely. That, I mean, they're talking about facing the winner of Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk. I think Ben Davison secretly hopes it's going to be Usyk because obviously it would be a bit of an awkward dynamic with him training Joshua to fight Fury when obviously them two have got their own history and they're obviously very close friends outside away from boxing. But yeah, of course, I think obviously the team was very confident going into the Ngannou fight. And look, they didn't overlook Ngannou, which is why Joshua performed the way that he did. But they are looking ahead to obviously the winner of that huge heavyweight dust up on May the 18th that we're all really looking forward to. So I think in terms of the way they've set their sights, Ngannou was just part of their mission of destruction, basically, like you've kind of hinted there.
Yeah, and the thing is, Eddie Hearn's, and fair play to him, he keeps banging on about how he believes Anthony Joshua will be a three-time heavyweight world champion, and it's going to plan at the minute. But does this, and you mentioned Tyson Fury there, in fight week, though, him and Francis were going back and forward a little bit, and he will always hold that thing of that guy, you went to split decision with Francis Ngannou. Does this really like put into perspective how bad Fury was on that night? And surely there's questions now of if AJ can do that and you were that bad. We knew you had an off night, but now AJ's done that to Francis. This just puts it into perspective, right?
Oh, massively. I mean, we both said straight after that fight back in October that Fury was just absolutely abysmal. I mean, neither of us could actually remember a time when he was that bad, even right at the beginning of his career. That was just the performance of someone who clearly was not focused throughout their training camp, completely overlooked their opponent, and as a result, just was just the worst performance ever from him. But I also think, and it's something that you mentioned just the other day, there is still that possibility that look, maybe Fury, he like Father Time has caught up with him. He's just suddenly gotten older overnight, and all of this experience in boxing is almost coming to an end for him. I mean, we can't rule out that possibility. We can only gauge what version of Fury we have left when he steps into the ring in May and faces Alexander Usyk, who's obviously going to be a completely different kettle of fish in terms of the problems that he's going to pose.
Yeah, I mean, we're all looking forward to that fight. And just quickly, Francis Ngannou, what's next for him? Me personally, I'd still like to see him in a boxing ring in some sense against maybe a lesser level opponent, but what do you see as next for him?
Yeah, I mean, again, we kind of said this the other day, like he's still very much marketable in boxing. I mean, you could put him in there with just about anyone in the division, and people will still be interested in the fight because it's Francis Ngannou, and people will still say, look, he did that against Fury. Why can't he do that against a lesser level of opposition? But I think yeah, Francis, he did get found out a little bit against Joshua, so I wouldn't mind seeing him go back to MMA. And as you probably say, he's got that deal in place with PFL, so maybe there's a few options for him back there.
So you're saying come back, go back to your own sport, mate. You can't come over to our sport over in boxing
Mean,
world.
it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world, mate, would it?
As we say, I'd always like to see some of these boxers in a cage, but you know, maybe one day, maybe. Well, Clarissa Shields a couple of weeks ago, to be fair. But
Well, you've got Clarissa Shields now, and of course you had Holly Holmes against Ronda Rousey, who obviously Holly Holmes came from a boxing background, so
People
there's the
forget
odd one in
Tom
there.
Aspinall as well, boxing background. One
Yeah.
and yeah, I mean, yeah, it's
MVP, who
interesting.
we'll come on to.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, there was another heavyweight fight just before the Ngannou Joshua fight. Weili Zhang Parker. Just a quick reaction on that one. I mean, a bit of a weird fight, I thought, when we were watching it. We thought Zhang was going to win at 1 minute, and then all of a sudden, Parker just a bit of a boxing masterclass, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, the more I think about that fight, the more I think Parker is just on this insane trajectory where he's fighting like a man who just won't be denied. Like
Yeah.
back when he was fighting the likes of Anthony Joshua and Dillian White, I could accuse him almost of just being passive in his performances against those two particular heavyweights. But especially in that Dillian White fight where White properly stuck it on him. He made it a dirty fight, and almost drug Joseph Parker into the trenches with him. And Parker just couldn't survive in that environment. Like, I think his bottle went a little bit. He just didn't know what to do. And now he just looks like a completely different animal. I mean, we all saw what he did against Deontay Wilder, and now he's got a reputation of nullifying these big heavyweight punchers like Wilder, like Zhang, who obviously we saw what he did to Joe Joyce just a few fights ago. He's riding the crest of a wave, and I think his next performance will be, yeah, something similar basically, because Zhang when Parker got up after that second knockdown, Zhang just sort of thought to himself, right, I'm just gonna coast throughout the rest of these rounds and hope maybe another knockdown comes. I think he definitely ran out of ideas in that fight, and Parker obviously made the most of it.
Yeah, and I must say we did watch the card together. And I think even we said at the time, before the fight, we said this is a proper good matchup, this. And again, we thought this is gonna be a proper war. And it was a weird fight because, as you said, you could accuse Parker of almost being passive early on in a couple years ago, early in his career. And you could say, come on, mate, when he's got in the opportunities, he sort of just fell a bit short and not really going for it. Whereas you could actually say that about Zhang on Friday night, about he got the two knockdowns, and you're saying to Zhang, go on, just finish him, just go for the finish. And he just, as you said, ran out of ideas, ran out of steam. And Parker, to be fair to him, to caveat that, he got straight back up after each knockdown and just kept on going and going and just technically being very good and showing that heart and showing that gas tank that you need to just dig through, and that's the question of how bad do you want it. And I think Parker just just won it off that, really. Just outboxed Zhang. Just and that's the thing with Zhang. He had that big left hand that landed and knocked obviously Parker down twice. But as I said, you were just there watching it, feeling like, go on, he needs to just go for it a bit more. But as you said, Parker just seems to be on this train at the minute where the momentum is sky high. And what do you think's next for him?
Well, he's actually got an argument now to say that he's the third best heavyweight in the world. And now I completely disagree with that sentiment. I think Joshua, given the fact that he's got a win over Parker for a start, but also his resume, you've got to put him in that position. But based off those last two performances, he's certainly a top five heavyweight. And now with Parker, if it's not a fight against Joshua, Fury, who's obviously his Bezzy mate, or Usyk, then who does he actually fight? Because let's be honest, any fight in the division's a real risk. Like, let's say you put him in there with someone like a Danny Dubois. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Dubois beat him. I'd probably favour Parker just based off his experience and his last two performances. But then Danny Dubois is a real live opponent. I mean, he can really punch. So you want to be really careful with how you match Parker now. He's obviously got the WBO interim belt, and which gives him a mandatory position for the world title. Until he actually gets that opportunity, you've got a potential rematch clause there with Zhang, which is just completely ridiculous. I mean, yeah. No one wants to see that fight again. We'll favour Parker massively to do the business, but it's just one of them ones where, why did we have a rematch clause in place for that? Like, there was an interim belt on the line. I mean, come on, boxing, sort yourself out. But yeah, in terms of his possibilities to match him up against potential heavyweights after that fight, I'm not sure. As I say, everyone's a risk.
Yeah, I mean, a rematch clause on an interim belt, I've never heard of the like, mate. I mean, ridiculous.
Mate, get used to it, mate. This is boxing.
Yeah, I mean, look, two great boxers, but I think after the performance on Friday night for Joseph Parker, no one really has a need to watch that back. But final thoughts on the card, Oscar. I mean, we had some other fights as well, but as an event as a whole, we had even more celebrities this time, few more faces.
There was a few there. I mean, obviously that's kind of that's lost a little bit on me. I mean, I don't pay too much attention to that sort of stuff. But then we were just constantly saying how poor the timing was for that card. Like, I don't know who was responsible for getting the fighters out there, but whoever it was needs to be sacked, because I felt like the timing was just absolutely atrocious. Like, at one point, we were waiting about an hour and a half, it seemed, between each fight. So that's something that definitely needs to get ironed out.
Yeah, I saw a lot of complaints actually about the timings. I mean, the Joshua Ngannou fight, I remember, wasn't until midnight. So, yeah, I mean, it was a late fight, but for us MMA fans, us European MMA fans, Oscar, midnight, nothing, as I firsthand experienced myself. Of course, the night after, Saturday night, Sunday morning. Of course, we had UFC 299 Miami. Oh, what a card. What a card. Unbelievable, especially after UFC 298. And then we've got UFC 300. I mean, it was a stellar card from top to bottom, really. And Dana came out. You might find this interesting, Oscar. He came out after an announcement in the press conference. It was actually the fourth highest grossing UFC event ever. So made it into the top five, which, I mean, just looking at the atmosphere on the night, I mean, I'm not surprised, really, to be fair. You obviously had the
who do you think's driving those pay-per-view sales?
Oh, I mean, it.
Like,
I mean,
who do you think's the main?
As we'll go on to, I'm sure. I mean, Sean O'Malley is an undeniable star, and he is probably, if not the one of the biggest stars in the UFC at the minute. I think we are starting to see some, not McGregor level stars, but some below that stardom in divisions, but I think Sean O'Malley is starting to build a following, and he has that brand. And but I also think the UFC knew what they were doing. They knew what they were cooking with putting Sean O'Malley on a Miami card, and obviously Chito Vera, who is obviously represents Ecuador and has a lot of, and in Miami you have a lot of the Spanish community, and Dustin Poirier, American sweetheart. So I think I think Dana and Hunter and the UFC guys knew what they were doing by putting Sean O'Malley, a sort of vibrant, colourful character suited for Miami. And then obviously Chito Vera, Ecuadorian, Spanish community, also have massive following. So I think, yeah, it was a great card they built there, I think, and Dana did well with this event, and obviously fourth highest grossing event. I mean, top class really. On the main event, Sean O'Malley, Chito Vera, two. Again, let's not forget that in their first fight, a couple years ago, during 2020, Sean O'Malley suffered that ankle injury in the first fight. But yeah, this coming into this fight, my prediction was that Sean O'Malley would win. I think he would. I think he's leveled up from that of a couple years ago, and I think you just have to look at the trajectory of Sean O'Malley and Chito Vera in those couple years. I think Sean has leveled up, as I've said, in the past couple years. And honestly, before I say anything about Sean, Chito is an absolute stud. He's an absolute warrior. He's been in the UFC now for years. And credit to him. How he went all five rounds in that fight, I still don't know. When he got hit with those knees, how he stayed on his feet, he's an absolute warrior. But Sean, this was an absolute MMA masterclass from Sean O'Malley, from first round to fifth round. I think his boxing, you want to talk about boxers and MMA fighters crossing over to boxing. I tell you now, Oscar, if Sean O'Malley crossed over into boxing, he would crush it. He would be unbelievable. Because
mate, I was just about to say, I don't know about him facing one of the world champions. Like, I know him and Shakur Stevenson had a little spat on Twitter not too long ago. And me being honest, Shakur would just absolutely annihilate him. But in terms of him crossing over to boxing, I could actually see him, as you say, potentially competing at A level. And yeah, I'm just looking at some of the highlights here. Like, his striking out of most UFC fighters that I watch is up there as one of the best. I mean, the way
Do you know what it was? He just kept them out of range with that long jab, and he just jab, 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 and then 1-2 just came in, and he never got caught in that in-between where Chito could maybe get on the inside and catch him. Sean just very tactically, very, very cleverly just stayed on the outside, but tap, tap, bang, just kept on doing that all fight, and then threw in a few knees in there. And then when Chito did find that opportunity to get on the inside, Sean just gave him a knee and said, you know what, nah, respect my space and stay in, that's your zone and this is my zone. And yeah, Chito, absolute stud. But Sean O'Malley, I mean, that jab, I knew Sean O'Malley was a great striker after that Aljamain Sterling knockout. I knew he was a top class striker, but against Chito, and look, Chito isn't on O'Malley's level, and that's no disrespect to him, but the way he pieced him up was just a thing of beauty. And if that's the thing, if you want to watch a sort of MMA overall masterclass, we talk a lot about fighters being very complete, like Leon Edwards, etc. Sean O'Malley is right up there. I just think there is that question over his wrestling. I do think if you can sort of get near him, which Chito didn't really pose a threat in the whole fight of getting Sean on his back, then I feel like we'll really see what Sean's made of. And we thought that would happen with Aljamain, but we saw how Sean caught Sterling with that amazing left hand. But yeah, great main event there, and great performance from Sean. On the co-main, another five-rounder. Dana was treating us tonight. A five-round co-main event between Dustin And Dustin the Diamond Poirier really living up to his name. I mean, again, we talk about Cheeto being a stud. Dustin Poirier is an absolute warrior. He's an absolute trooper. He doesn't say no to any fight. He goes in that, and you know with Dustin Poirier, it's going to be a war. But this time it was a bit different because he came in after that head kick knockout loss to Justin Gaethje, and people did sort of look at Dustin and say, okay, where is he at in his career? He beats Conor McGregor, but then he loses to Justin Gaethje. So where is he sort of at? Is he sort of on the decline? But Son Deonon coming up is this young guy ranked, I think, not even in the top 10, maybe 11th, 12th. And Dustin Poirier showed Son Deonon a real lesson and taught him a true lesson of, okay, there's still killers in this division. Don't get cocky, don't get arrogant, because Dustin Poirier just gave him an absolute schooling, and it was a warrior, and the thi and he's a warrior. And the thing is, he kept on going for that guillotine, and you even saw Mike Brown, his coach, say in between rounds, stop shooting the guillotine because he would end up in his back. But then what a KO, throwing, I think it was a left hook which caught Son Deonon, and it was a right hook, sorry, which caught him, and absolute what living up to his name as the Diamond, because he truly is, and he's still right up there. Look, he's had his shots at the belt, and it's not really worked out for him, but look, he's still a top class guy and a real hard fight for anyone in that division. We had a lot of other fights as well. Michael Venom Page, I know you were interested in this one, Oscar. Of course, UK zone. We have another UK fighter join the UFC roster. What a performance! What a performance! And the thing is with Michael Venom Page, it was a hard watch at times because I really like Kevin Holland. I really respect him. He's a really nice guy. He's a funny guy. Like, and again with him, he won't shy away from any opponents. He'll take a fight on short notice, no problem. But I was watching that, and Michael Venom Page was sort of it seemed to be sort of embarrassing Kevin Holland, doing all of his dancing and his shit talk. Normally it's Kevin Holland doing that to other people, whereas this time it was Kevin Holland getting shit talk. So I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. And the fight, look, the fight wasn't pretty either, we have to say. But for MVP, win on his debut, no problem. On to the next one. So I don't know, did you catch any of that one?
So I found it quite funny whenever obviously Holland went on his back, MVP would just start like dancing. He'd start doing this like slow motion dance, and I think in the end the ref was getting a little bit tired of his antics, but it's all about entertainment really. And obviously he's been given that stage, and it's part of the business. You want to be selling yourself, and I think MVP definitely did that. Obviously, he's got a background in boxing, so I think I was saying to you before, like that style that he has, it's not really suited to boxing, where fundamentals are massive. And I don't think he'd fully grasped the fundamentals of boxing before he went ahead and adopted this elusive, unorthodox style that seems to be working for him at the minute, but let's not forget what happened to him when he faced Douglas Lima in Bellator, and he obviously lost that in a convincing fashion. So
Yeah, and the thing
I
is,
wouldn't.
yeah,
Go on,
go
go on.
on, sorry.
I was just going to finish by saying I wouldn't be so quick to sort of start waxing lyrical about MVP and start saying he can beat that, he can beat him, he can beat him, because I think he steps up in levels and he could potentially get found out once again.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This is what I was going to come on to. Kevin Holland, again with him, he's a tough guy, and it will be a tough fight, especially in the UFC debut. So for MVP, it was all about getting the win and moving on. And now he's in the rankings. He'll get ranked. So you've got to respect that, and fair play to MVP. But the only thing I will say about watching that fight is I watched MVP, and at the time, I thought to myself, I don't see this guy like being anything special within the rankings. I don't think as of now, and come back to me, hey, in a year's time when he's gone on to win the belt or whatever. But as of now, I'm watching him against Kevin Holland and I'm going, look, you're good, you're decent, but you cannot do all of that against a high level top five guy, for example, because you will get found out. You can't be dancing around. You can't be sort of doing all of that palaver against a real high level opponent, especially within that division. So we'll see. Like, and don't get me wrong, I want him to go on and do absolutely bits and supporting all the UK fighters, and it's about getting the win and fair play to him. But I think, yeah, he just needs to. I just want to see some improvement from obviously this fight. But talking of improvement, and if there's anyone to go off a blueprint of what to do and how to step up in the rankings against a higher level guy, is the next fighter, and the next fight, which was Gilbert Burns versus Jack Della Maddalena. Wow, what a performance this was from Maddalena. I mean, Gilbert Burns, again, another tough guy, will always give you an absolute war. And his resume recently, Masvidal, Usman, the people he's been in there against, Hamza, the top level fighters. But this fight I thought was interesting because Della Maddalena, obviously on great form, great momentum, hasn't lost yet. But I thought this. I didn't. I wasn't confident against Burns. I wasn't confident for him against Burns because I think Burns is a real tough test, especially for a young guy like him. 11th ranked against 4th ranked, and sometimes ranking doesn't mean anything. But I think when you TKO, Burns in the way Della Maddalena did it, and the way he's going to skyrocket into the rankings now, and well, it has to go above Burns potentially. So I think two guys, two warriors, but Della Maddalena, and it came out recently, Burns broke Della Maddalena's arm in the first round, and Della Maddalena still went on to TKO Burns with he caught him with a great knee, which sort of shut the lights out to a certain extent, and then finished him with great elbows. But to think his arm was broken in that makes it even more impressive for him, and so many possibilities for him. Gilbert Burns, look, he's on a bit of a slide at the minute, losing to Hamza. He lost to Usman a couple years ago maybe, and again with him, he's still going to be a tough fighter for anyone to face, but I think he's just in and amongst that top 10 now where you start there's dangers of him becoming a gatekeeper, and I don't want to see that for Gilbert. I want to see him still be that guy who has that knockout power, but we could start seeing him turning into a Cerrone, hopefully not as bad with Gilbert. But yeah, I mean, that sort of summarizes UFC 299. Donald Trump in attendance as well, if you're wondering. So I mean, he's a massive MMA fan apparently, Oscar. So
Yeah, well, he's trying to get the voters on side at the minute, isn't he? So
yeah, I mean.
potentially this is a bit of a soft power tactic by making his face known to the MMA world.
Yeah, well, the little Dana White Donald Trump link up for a little presidential campaign. I mean, they're best friends. He loves the UFC, and I mean, Colby Covington's is main supporter as well. So, but yeah, it was that's just a summary of UFC 299. I mean, it was a great card as sort of the numbers speak for themselves, really. And then in a month's time, less than a month, UFC 300. So I think really the three cards we've been treated to are just, I mean, arguably some of the greatest cards we've had in the company's history. And arguably, I was thinking about this recently. 298 and 299 could arguably be better than 300. Obviously, you've got Jamahal Hill and Alex Pereira as the main event, but yeah, top class cards. And for Sean O'Malley, he called out Ilia Topuria, the featherweight champion. Obviously, just beat Alexander Volkanovski. Look, everyone seems like they want to go for that sort of double champ status. I want Sean to just chill at bantamweight at the minute and sort of gain a bit of a resume within that division. Like I say with all champions, really, dominate your division first and then go up and try become a double champ. There's obviously still Merab Dvalishvili in bantamweight, which I think would probably make sense for the next fight. But yeah, great performance from Sean O'Malley. And if there was any doubters before, there's definitely not any doubters anymore. So yeah, 2 days, two nights, Oscar, of real great combat sports, really. We had the boxing on Friday night and the MMA on Saturday night. So any final concluding thoughts, mate?
Yeah, no, I think you kind of sum it up nicely there with what you said about Sean O'Malley. I mean, there's one thing going through all the divisions. Obviously, Manny Pacquiao, an absolute legend in boxing, he became an 8-weight world champion by the end of his career, which, I mean, I don't know whether anyone will go on to do that in this current generation, but that is an outstanding achievement in itself. But then there's something to be said for, yeah, being the dominating force in your own division, like the likes of Joe Calzaghe, or Karl Froch were, where they just wanted to establish themselves as super middleweights and they weren't bothered about moving up, moving down. So I think you kind of sum that up quite nicely.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I think the way I see having a double champ status, especially within the UFC, is that it should be a rarity. It should be something that's special and something that doesn't come around very often. I think if we start handing out double champ opportunities willy-nilly, I think it sort of loses that sort of feeling of how special the achievement is. But as I said, if you prove yourself within your own division and dominate and clean out your division, then I think the natural conclusion to your reign is to go either down or up a division to gain that double champ status. I think if Sean beats Merab and then maybe has a couple more fights in that division, then he has every right. And that's the thing with Alexander Volkanovski. He had two attempts at becoming double champ. So I think that's an occasion where, look, he got two chances because he got in there 10 days notice. But that is also the trend that we're following now, where maybe we are going to see more fighters get the double champ status. I mean, I say all this, don't get me wrong, I would love to see O'Malley versus Ilia Topuria. I mean, what a fight that would be. In the Santiago Bernabéu as well in Madrid, imagine.
Ooh.
I mean, yeah. I mean, don't get me dreaming, Oscar, because it ain't gonna happen anytime soon, I don't think, anyway. But I mean, if the UFC want to try and save UFC 300 real quick, come on, I've got a solution for you. But no, I think I'll leave the matchmaking up to the experts, because for now they're
leave the matchmaking for Adam Catchell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, look, I'll leave it to the experts, especially within the UFC, because they seem to be doing an amazing job at the minute. And yeah, Oscar, it's been really good to talk combat sports with you once again, mate.
Absolutely, mate. Always enjoy a nice little chat with you, and look forward to the next one.
Yeah, and that, as I said, the next one will be out shortly, talking maybe all things, you could say, outside the ring or outside the cage. We've had Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, Ryan Garcia. We've had just today of recording, actually, Masvidal, Nate Diaz. So all of that to come in the next episode of the Punching Pod. But for now, it's goodbye.